Thanks for joining us today on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mueller, and it's time to talk about the world of science and science education. Our guest today, with us by phone, Bassam Shakashiri. He is a professor of chemistry in the UW-Madison and a master of chemical demonstrations. So we'll talk with him maybe about some of those demonstrations. We'll talk about some upcoming science events, and we'll take a look at how the government shutdown affected research in the sciences. And of course, we'll take your calls as well. So what are the science issues that you're concerned about or maybe just have questions about? I'd love to hear from you. Give us a call. Your number to call is 1-800-642-1234, or you can send us an email to ideas@wpr.org. And again, we'd love to hear from you. And Bassam Shakashiri, welcome back. Good to have you with us.
I'm very happy to be with you, Larry, even though I'm not with you in the studio at this time.
Well, I tell you what, it's good to have you even by phone. And I you know, when I think about science, we don't always often think, I don't believe, about concerts and plays and their ties to a science. In other words, combining science with the arts. So you have something coming up that does that.
Well, you know, Larry, creativity, passion, and the urge for expression and explorations are essential human qualities. They're common to the sciences and to the arts. And this is very important for us to recognize as we explore the connections between human creativity among artists, scientists, and humanists. So, yes, we have a couple of very interesting events coming up. The first one is on February 8th. In the afternoon and in the evening. It's a play by a theater group from the state of Oregon, and it's a play, it's a performance of the stories of women scientists who have and have not received the Nobel Prize. The name of this play, are you ready for this?
Yeah.
Nobels.
Well,
get it?
I do indeed. No bells. All right. That sounds intriguing.
This play makes visible the significant contributions of women in science and also serves as a powerful catalyst for increasing the interactions between the sciences and the community. This is a play created by this theater group in Portland, Oregon. They will be in Madison the afternoon of Friday, February 8th, with a free and public presentation in the chemistry building at 3:30 in the afternoon, and then again at 7:30 in the evening. And if people go to the Sciences Fund website, you'll be able to see how you can register for this. It's not required, but we'd like to get an idea who's going to come because of the limitations on the seating capacity. So if you go to scifun.org, scifun.org, you'll find information about this event on February 8th in the chemistry building in our seminar hall. One performance is at 3:30, the other one is at 7:30. This event is free and open to the public. But please visit the website, and you can tell us if you are interested in this event. As I say, this is a very serious and profound attempt to link scientists and artists, that's one of the purposes of one of my programs, the program on science, the arts, and the humanities. That's to encourage people who value and appreciate science and the arts to link with each other. These programs focus on the relationships and the similarities and the differences and inquiry on creativity and personal expressions among scientists, artists, and humanists. Science is a way of looking at the world. Scientists examine carefully natural phenomena. Technologists use science to create products for us to improve the human condition most of the time. And humanists and artists express themselves in try to connect the spiritual means, the spiritual values that human beings have with the community. So this first event is on February the 8th.
I'm gonna have to talk to Emily and my daughter and see if we can go together to that play. That would be a lot of fun.
That would be wonderful. You're most welcome. Others are most welcome to come too. Two performances: 3:30 in the afternoon, 7:30 in the evening. Friday, February 8th, in the Chemistry Building at the UW campus. The second event, Larry, is again in keeping with the same theme, is called Concert at Chemistry. We're featuring two world premiere performances by a chemistry professor who's also a music composer. And we're also featuring a work that we commissioned by a young musician, voice performances. And that's on Thursday, February 14th at 4 p.m., in the same location in the Chemistry Building. This one-hour program will, again, showcase the creativity that we have in the sciences, in the arts, and we like to share this with people in the community. So everyone is invited to this free and public event as well. Again, if you go to the website, scifun.org, scifun.org, you'll find a way to express your interest in coming to this. Seating is limited, so it'll be first come, first served basis.
Well, it's a nice nice little thing to do on Valentine's Day.
It is Valentine's Day, and it's our Valentine's present to all the sweethearts of science, the arts, and the humanities.
There you go. Well, I tell you what, we'll mention those again before the show's over. But I wanted to talk with you about the partial government shutdown. It ended last Friday. What science agencies were included in that?
Oh, several agencies were affected by this. Not only the agencies themselves, but the people who are funded by the agencies. So the agencies included the National Science Foundation, the U.S. Department of Agriculture, the Food and Drug Administration, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, the National Institute of Standards and Technology, and the government is now open for 3 weeks only. So it's really hard to tell what's going to happen next. But all of these agencies, I'll say a few things about the National Science Foundation, because I worked there as a assistant director some long time ago. They have a backlog of proposals that have been submitted electronically. They have a huge number of grants that have to be handled, and it's not clear whether they'll be able to handle them all in this three-week period. Nobody knows what's going to happen after that. The effect has been, let me put it this way, not nicely. I mean, I put it nicely, but not good. There are panels that review these grant proposals that they were scheduled to meet. They have not met. It's not clear whether there will be meeting in the next couple of weeks. The problem is the disruption of continuity and stability in a very important and worthwhile process that encourages and supports research in all the sciences. And my plea to the people in the listening audience is to contact our elected officials and urge them to act in ways that would prevent such shutdowns in the future. I know this is somewhat political, but, you know, we are all citizens of the state of Wisconsin and citizens of the other states in the neighboring areas and in your listening audience range here. I think everyone has a responsibility to share our convictions about the importance of having the government be functional and functional. It's got to function. It's got to serve the purposes for which we all support our government. So please consider contacting your elected officials about the importance of keeping the government open and operational and expecting very high standards of performance.
Bassam Shakashiri, our guest today, he is a professor of chemistry at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, giving us a little science update today, talking, we talked about some events that relate to science and the arts, and we're talking a bit about the government shutdown, and there are some other things we can talk about. Certainly, if you have questions, I hope you'll join in. The number to call is 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org. Let's take a call. Don in Anago will give you a chance. Hi, Don. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi. Over the weekend, I noticed that there was a dam that collapsed in Brazil, and it was an iron mine. But I did some research, and I found out that one of the same Brazilian mining companies that they work with owns some land in the Northwoods. And I'm wondering, what would happen if we had sulfide mining in the Northwoods, and what would be some of the chemical reactions we'd have to be afraid of?
Mining is an important issue that faces us in Wisconsin. This is not the first time this question comes up. Well, it's the first time it comes up about the damage in Brazil. There are serious environmental consequences to the release of a number of chemicals that can be affecting the environment badly. One specific chemical is sulfides. These are substances that are part of the minerals and part of the extraction. We just have to be concerned about the safe handling of and the consequences of any natural or other disasters that occur. We don't have any big dams in Wisconsin, but the caller is correct in calling attention to the need to be environmentally responsible for all the activities, industrial, economic activities that take place in our state.
Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. And again, you can join in at 800-642-1234. Give us a call. I'm Larry Mueller. Jill Nadeau, our producer today. Dave Potratz, our engineer. And you are listening to the Ideas Network. We're looking at science and science education today with our guest, Bassam Shakashiri, professor of chemistry at UW-Madison. Call in with your own questions or comments at 1-800-642-1234 or email us at ideas@wpr.org. Let's take a call from Gary in Fitchburg next. Hi, Gary.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call and having the show. I'm hearing more commentary about weather geoengineering, and some folks are calling it, referring to it as chemtrails, the controversy whether they're spraying in the sky. And I've noticed a lot of whatever's going on up there, it doesn't seem that it's natural. So does the professor have an opinion? Thank
All right.
you so much.
Thank you, Gary.
Thank you, Gary. Yes, geoengineering is a topic that is taken very seriously because of the consequences it can have, the positive consequences it can have on climate. On the other hand, there are very, very serious concerns about adverse, very negative consequences of putting sulfur up in the atmosphere. The National Academy of Sciences is looking at this carefully. Researchers all over the country, all over the world, are examining this. I am a strong advocate of considering this approach, but I am not convinced of the overall positive effect of it. So that increasing the amount of sulfur particulate matter in the atmosphere is what this is generally about. But the consequences are, the negative consequences have to be taken into strong consideration, and I'm not convinced yet that this is something that we should be doing. I am convinced that we should explore it, and we should try to find out more and learn more about the positive as well as the negative effects.
And thanks very much for calling. Appreciate your call. You are also a strong advocate of increasing awareness of the effects of climate change. And how much should scientists be involved in the politics of climate change? I'm wondering that.
Well, Larry, you know, climate change affects everyone, scientists, non-scientists. I think scientists should be more involved in the political aspects of the science that they practice, the aspects that relate to the communities. And so I'm an advocate of having scientists be responsibly concerned and expressing their concerns about matters that they have discovered in their research, about matters that affect the quality of life that we have, not only in Wisconsin and the U.S., but around the globe. I'm an advocate of responsible action on the part of scientists to handle matters and to try to raise the level of science literacy among the population so that we all together can make responsible decisions when we vote or when we express ourselves via petitions or any other political action. I think scientists should learn how to approach these interactions. The nature of these interactions is different than the nature of the research that we do in our laboratories. And that's a skill that most scientists have yet to develop. I believe all scientists are capable of developing this skill. They may not choose to do it. That's a different matter. But for those who are concerned about the connections between science and society, it is an important responsibility that we have. In addition to making discoveries and advancing knowledge and developing new products, it is our responsibility to share the findings of our science, the consequences that they have, not only to us personally, but to others in the community. So I'm an advocate of responsible political action by scientists. I'll give you an example.
Okay.
The Union of Concerned Scientists is a very effective group. And I urge people in the listening audience to look them up on the web. Just use whatever search engine you use. Union of Concerned Scientists. They're concerned about nuclear power, climate change, their water quality. There are other examples too, but start with them. So, in the recent election, several people with strong backgrounds in science were elected to the U.S. Congress. I'm not saying a scientist that necessarily makes a good politician. What I'm saying is the people who were elected to the Congress can provide a perspective to the fellow Congress people that goes beyond providing testimony at a committee hearing and so on. So I'm a strong advocate of having people fully participate as citizens in the communities where we live. Just like lawyers, social workers, artists, other people participate in our civic duties and civic responsibilities. I'm an advocate of having scientists do the same thing. And it's important that we develop the skills for communicating science. It's not just knowing the facts. That's not enough. It's important for us to be able to have conversations with people about science and technology, the uses and the benefits of science and technology, the potential hazards that sometimes accrue from new developments and new technologies. So developing this communication skill is important. Larry, you know all about this because of the department that you're in on campus.
Exactly, and we're doing a lot of work. Dietram Scheufele, Dominique Brossard, and others are doing a lot of research and work into how scientists can do a better job of communicating science information to the public.
I think that's a very important thing that my colleagues, our colleagues, are doing, and it is more than communicating the information. It is helping develop a healthy attitude to know what to do with the information, how to make decisions about the information that is being shared, how to be responsible in making these decisions for the benefit of the community, for the economic benefit, for the social benefit. All of these aspects are very important, and I don't want anyone to sound like I'm a scientist. I'm here to tell you, and you listen to me. That's not what we're talking about. I'm talking about having respectful conversations with people. Talk with people. Listen to what people are saying when a scientific issue, such as global warming. Global warming is not only a scientific issue. It's a human issue. It affects everyone. It affects everyone, no matter where you live. And it is a huge challenge to us. I dare say it's the single most important challenge that humanity has faced, not only today, but in history and in the future. So there are other challenges, but global warming is unequivocal. And we need to be conversing about it. We need to look at what the facts are, what the consequences are. We need to develop attitudes to handle these different and difficult situations that we face. And that's part of our responsibility as scientists.
You may or may not have an opinion or an answer to this, but relating to climate change, Vern had wondered how the Milankovitch cycles relate to current climate change. And I'm not familiar with the Milankovitch cycles.
Can he tell us more about it, or is it?
No, he's not with us anymore.
Oh, sorry. I don't know about it. Maybe someone will call in and tell us what it is.
It may have been a question that our weather guys yesterday might have had an answer for. Well, again, you can join in with your own questions or comments at 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us at ideas@wpr.org. Love to hear from you. Well, let's take a look at science fields for a minute. What science fields do you see growing the fastest in the next, 10 years or so?
Well, I don't have a very good crystal ball, Larry, but there are areas that relate to nanoscience and nanotechnology. I'd say those are two important and related areas. And then another area is artificial intelligence. Those are three areas that come to mind. The fourth one is drug delivery, pharmaceuticals, and research that goes on all over the world to improve and develop ways to deliver drugs in the body in safe and effective ways. It's... what's the old saying? I forgot what it is exactly now. Only fools predict the future or something like that. So, but these areas have a momentum. We have huge research investments at UW-Madison and elsewhere around the country, around the world, in all of these areas. Artificial intelligence is something we all should think about, the consequences of having robots do things for us, the consequences. We have it already in our cars right now. We have all kinds of sensors that help us park, that give us telltales if we change lanes without putting the blinker on. We have great technology available to us, and all of that is going to is contributing to development of robotic behavior, self-driving cars, all kinds of automation in industry, the effect of that on the social fabric of society, on jobs, all of these areas are areas that require good research and good understanding by the public about this research and the consequences of this research. So for the younger people in the listening audience and for the parents of the younger people, the future in this regard is very bright if we take the responsibility to address these issues in ways that are good for us and good for the community.
Let's take another call here. John in Madison, will turn to you next. John, hi, thanks for calling.
Hi, I have a little bit of knowledge about the Milankovitch cycles that he mentioned earlier. They're the ways that Jupiter and Saturn, their orbits and how they coordinate and synchronize with each other affect the Earth orbit, making it go from circular to kind of an ellipsoid orbit. And the way that our orbit processes, like where the furthest point from the sun the our seasons happen in, and that affects our climate on sort of a thousands of years type scale. As far as I understand, global warming, we would enter an ice age no matter if global climate change, no matter how that affects our climate. However, that would be happening thousands of years from now. So no matter what, the climate change will still kind of affect us.
All right.
The time scale is very long. And you know, Larry, one of the things I really like about your show is that not only do I get to share things that I know about, but I get to learn, just like I did now. And I think this this question, maybe Jim Lattis or the weather guys or my niece, the science writer for National Geographic,
yeah.
Nadia Drake, she's been on your show.
Yes.
I'm going to make a note of this and post some information about it on my website, scifund.org, for people who are interested in that. On my website, by the way, I do have a special page that relates to climate science. If you go to scifund.org, on the left-hand side, you'll see climate science. Click there, you'll find lots of information about climate science, and that's where I will add this information that just learned about
from John. And actually, Brent and Peshtigo, thanks, John. Brent and Peshtigo has something to add, I guess. Brent?
Hi, yeah, just adding on to what John said there with the Milankovitch cycles, they are long-term changes in the shape of the Earth's orbit, and there is some evidence linking it to the cycle of ice ages. But where it shows up a lot now is on these anti-global warming conspiracy theories that they tend to act as a counter-argument to the evidence for man-made created global warming. They tried to use the Milankovitch cycles to indicate that that's what's causing global warming and not human beings. And so, hold on a second here. And so as a result, they've got this counter thing out there, this conspiracy theory. And we'll just leave it at that.
All right.
There is no doubt that there are natural causes for global warming. There is zero doubt in my mind that the contributions from humanity to the amount of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere is responsible for a huge change in global warming. It far exceeds the effect of natural causes. And that's why we need to be working very carefully about our sources of energy to reduce our dependence on the use of fossil fuels for energy. Yes, we should examine all of these issues, all of these points, and that's precisely what I mean when I say we should engage in respectful conversations about the facts, about the thinking that people have about all of these issues, and let us not reduce ourselves to having petty conversations and calling names and so on. This is what some people who do not accept the science of climate change engage in. I respect them as fellow human beings. I do not respect the thoughts and ideas that they present, nor do I respect and like the way by which they do it. So, but there's room for all of us to act in very civil, respectful ways. And so I wanted to say that about global warming in this regard, Larry. And I also want to say that it should be part of our culture. It is part of our culture to try to relate all kinds of human activities, whether it's in the arts, in the sciences, in the humanities, in economics, to try to connect and relate all of these human activities and human endeavors in such good ways to serve society, to serve society well. And so that's my plea to everyone in the listening audience. And I'm going to put something about climate on the climate science page about the effect we just talked about.
Somebody else, let's go back to the science fields that are growing the fastest in the next 10 years or so. Someone else was wondering about what high school students should be doing to help themselves prepare for a career in science, maybe in some of these areas.
This is a very important question in terms of the curriculum that we have in our schools. Your question is about high schools. The high school students should work with their teachers and with the parents to make sure that they get well educated in mathematics, in the physical, natural sciences, in the biological sciences, in history, in civics, so that they can become ready to tackle the very difficult questions that face humanity. These questions include population growth, limited resources, water, for example, war, spreading disease. All of these challenges require high school students, all of us, not just the high school students and the teachers and the parents, everyone in the community, to be concerned about the quality of life that we have and the quality of life that we want our children and grandchildren to live in. So preparation for careers in science and careers in teaching science, I want to add that too. Yes, high school students should think about that. They should explore opportunities. There are many opportunities in our state and elsewhere around the country for high school students to pursue careers in science, careers in technology, careers in engineering, careers in mathematics, careers in teaching science. But I don't want all high school students to consider only these careers. We need people to be also studying and contributing to history, to geography, social studies, the languages, the civil and civic behavior. We need a good educational systems that call on the best in us to improve the human condition. And high school students, back to your question, can help by exploring all kinds of opportunities and finding out how they can pursue careers in science and in other areas, as well as careers in teaching science and other topics too.
Well, I want to go back to the events that are coming up. You've got an event on February 8th that deals with women in science, some who have won. It's a play, right?
Yes, it's a play. It's a word play. There'll be actors, and they will be presenting this play on Friday, February the 8th at 3:30 and again at 7:30 in the chemistry building. The event is free and open to the public. It is part of the cultural offering of my research and public engagement program, Larry. It is to bring people together so that we examine in a joyful and meaningful way the interactions that men and women have in science. It is to me a travesty that women are not recognized for their scientific accomplishments as men are. And that's what this play deals with. It deals with the stories of women scientists who have and have not received the Nobel Prize. And that's the name of the play, Nobels. And everyone in the community is invited to come, provided we have room for you. Space is limited, so visit the website and tell us and express your interest in coming. The other event, Larry, is a week later. It is a musical concert at Chemistry. We're bringing a piano into the Chemistry building, and we're going to have music by Professor John Barry, one of my colleagues at UW-Madison. He is a composer. And we're going to have songs of discovery by a young composer, Julian Pozniak. He is from the Madison area. He doesn't live in Madison right now. And we have performers from the School of Music, from the Chemistry Department. That event is on Valentine's Day at 4 p.m. in the Chemistry Building. And again, you can get information about it by visiting the SciFund.org website.
And the SciFund.org website, if you haven't been there, you should just go there anyway and take a look, because there are experiments that you can do at home with your children or your grandchildren. There's a lot on that site, and it's really a fun site to go to.
Thank you, Larry. Thank you for saying that. And if you go to the website, at the very bottom of the website, you'll find the email address where you can get in touch with us. So we love to hear from you, and we look forward to hearing from you and to seeing some of you at both events in the next couple of weeks.
Thanks, Bassam. Appreciate it very much. Bassam Shakashiri, professor of chemistry at the UW-Madison. He's known for his leadership in national science policy and promoting excellence in science education at all levels, and kind of really for the developing and using of demonstrations in teaching of chemistry. We didn't get to Once Upon a Christmas Cherry in the Land of Shakashiri, but there are times when you can actually see those presentations on Wisconsin Public Television and other places as well. We'll have him back and we'll talk with him again. Coming up, though, there are some really cool stories that you may or may not know about. Did you know that we're in Wisconsin, there's only one of only four places in this country where you can learn how to make a violin, and it's right here in Wisconsin. We'll find out about that story and many more stories about Wisconsin coming up next on the Ideas Network.